New Galaxy Enterprises proudly presents Threshold Radio.
This is Johnny Bluestar. Welcome to Threshold, a global media event. Is the universe just a random dance of atoms, or is it a manifestation of a supremely intelligent architect? Can its purpose, or our purpose here on Earth, be adequately assessed? Can we commune with it, know its intentions, cooperate with its direction? Here, we define Threshold as a gateway state of awareness, allowing mankind to cross into a place of real cognition. Threshold allows us to approach questions of higher reality through the door of experience rather than mere belief. Welcome to Threshold, where we tear away the veil from commercial media, bringing our audience and participants into another realm of reality and enhanced communication.
Back on Threshold with Ken Ead and Sarah Westall, we just finished talking about the serious comments and allegations Clinton and Sanders had thrown at each other. But there's another phenomenon I truly would like to understand, and that's the reaction of Republicans to winning the election. There's no doubt that no one has exceeded Donald Trump in saying nasty things about everyone. Yet it is interesting to see how former candidates and former opposition in the Republican Party now begin to accept him despite his consistent and relentless personal attacks against the press, his opposition, and members of his own party. As our first example, let's take presidential candidate Chris Christie, who was attacked by Trump when he was surging in the polls for the New Hampshire primary.
So you have Obama, I don't call it a hug. I call it a hug mentally. It was like, it was unbelievable. He was like a little boy. Oh, I'm with the president. Remember, he flew in the helicopter and he was all excited to be in the helicopter. But you know, the people in New Jersey want to throw him out of office. They say, why isn't he running New Jersey? We're a disaster state. We're going to hell. And our governor's up in New Hampshire every single day having town hall meetings. He ought to be doing it in New Jersey, in all fairness, okay?
Actually, Christie was generous in his response, but when he endorsed Trump, he was more than generous. Take a listen.
I am proud to be here to endorse Donald Trump for president of the United States. I've been on that stage. I've gotten to know all the people on that stage. And there is no one who is better prepared to provide America with the strong leadership that it needs, both at home and around the world, than Donald Trump. He is, looking at the five people on that stage last night, the clear standout and the person who will do exactly what needs to be done to make America a leader around the world again. He'll provide strong, unequivocal leadership. He will do what needs to be done to protect the American people first and foremost, both in the homeland and in creating jobs for this country. And he will make sure that people around the world know that America keeps its word again. Donald Trump is someone who, when he makes a promise, he keeps it. I've experienced that over my long friendship with him. And what the American people and our allies around the world are going to understand is that Donald Trump is someone who keeps his word, and that means America will keep its word again.
How do you look at this endorsement, given the level at which Christie was insulted and handled by Trump during the campaign? Is this simply a cold political tactic embellished with false sentiment, or is this real?
Well, I think it's a cold political tactic.
You see, when he was attacked.
Well, I think it's a game.
Well, when he was attacked, he responded immediately that day. And he basically said, you know, I thought I was having a bad day and I'm going to just wish him the merriest holiday or something. And he didn't say anything bad at all.
That was very gracious of him.
Then he comes back and he says this, you know, how much he loves Trump and how he's known him for so many years. He's known him for so many years, but then while he's on the podium, he attacks him viciously.
I think Trump explains it himself, I think, the best. He says, you know, I'm going to get along with all these guys, you know, even Mario Rubio, because they're politicians. They're politicians. They're going to say what they need to say. Basically, they're going to talk out the other side of their mouth because now they know who the winner is and they're going to fall in line behind the winner so they can get all the spoils along with him. Because face it, when you're with the president in your party, you want the president to be in your party, first of all, and then you're going to get a lot of benefits from that as a politician. So I think what you said about being a cold political tactic, it's a real run-of-the-mill, ordinary political tactic. We see it all the time.
Well, I have to agree with you.
Well, I think they know it's a game.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's a game, and I don't know if they take it all that personally. I think they take some of the stuff personally, but I think that's the game they're playing.
Yep. Yeah, but they're playing it a little bit more brutally. Right? They're playing it a little more brutally than before, I think.
Yeah, they are. I mean, I thought it was brutal before, but now it just comes to the point of being ridiculous.
And the problem is that the public takes it seriously, even if they're not.
Well, I want to go on with another example. Ben Carson, this is a little more interesting. In an event in Fort Dodge, Iowa, Trump expressed his disgust with the voters in Iowa for supporting then-candidate Ben Carson. Commenting on a passage from an autobiographical book which discussed his early anger issues and how he tried to stab a friend with a knife. In this segment, he's questioning the reality of the story itself. Let's listen.
How stupid are the people of Iowa? How stupid are the people of the country? So he said he has pathological disease. Now, if you're pathological, there's no cure for that, folks. Okay? There's no cure for that. But if you're a child molester, there's no cure. They can't stop you. Pathological, there's no cure. Now, he said he was pathological. Okay. What have we come to? When we have to believe this kind of stuff, and we're going to put somebody in office who considers himself to have pathological disease, read the definition in the dictionary of pathological disease. And I'm not saying it. He said it about himself before he knew he was going to run for office. He took a knife and he went after a friend and he lunged. He lunged that knife into the stomach of his friends. But lo and behold, it hit the belt. It hit the belt. And the knife broke. Give me a break. Give me a break. Give me a break. The knife broke. Let me tell you, I'm pretty good at this stuff. So I have a belt. Somebody hits me with a belt. It's going in because the belt moves this way. It moves this way. It moves that way. He hit the belt buckle. Anybody have a knife? You want to try it on me? Believe me, it ain't going to work. You're going to be successful. But he took the knife. He went like this. And he plunged it into the belt. And amazingly, the belt stayed totally flat. And the knife broke. How stupid are the people of Iowa? How stupid are the people of the country to believe this crap? So here's the good news. He's now saying all of that stuff happened. Because otherwise, he's a liar. So Carson, the knife broke. There it is. It's laying in the... So what he's saying is that these series of events, and he goes into the bathroom for a couple of hours, and he comes out, and now he's religious. And the people of Iowa believe him. Give me a break. Give me a break. It doesn't happen that way. It doesn't happen that way. And some people might not like it. Oh, that's not really nice what you say. Don't be fools. Don't be fools.
Pretty nasty calling Carson a pathological liar. Well, Carson is all about forgiveness. Just having recently endorsed Donald Trump, here's a part of what he says about it.
And some people said, but, well, you know, he said terrible things about you. How can you support him? Well, first of all, we buried the hatchet. That was political stuff. And, you know, that happens in American politics. The politics of personal destruction, all that, is not something that I particularly believe in or anything that I get involved in. But I do recognize that it is a part of the process. We move on because it's not about me. It's not about Mr. Trump. It's about America.
There's something called the Stockholm Syndrome. This is a psychological condition where a victim begins to bond, that is, look favorably with respect and even love on their captive, on their captor, with respect and even love on their captor. Is Carson somehow infected with a condition like this? Because the degree of toxicity, whether true or not, attempted to brand Carson as a pathological liar is rather out there. Let's face it, in my opinion, the whole debate is not so much as a debate about issues, but rather a forum for psychological warfare. Considering the propensity of Trump to destroy people's reputation and credibility for any number of reasons, why would Carson so readily back Trump? Are we dealing with political savvy, tender-hearted compassion, or something else? I'd like your thoughts, Ken and Sarah.
Well, I think, again, Johnny, it's all political. I mean, like Sarah said, it's playing the game. I don't think there's any tender-hearted compassion that Carson has toward Trump. He probably has loathed contempt for him. But he's going to back the winner. And, you know, he was one of the early ones who figured out that Trump was going to be a winner. So we have to credit him for that, don't we?
Yes, I suppose so.
Well, I think they want to back. Well, they want to back the person who's going to, because their strategy and their ideas for how they want the country going aligns more with Trump than with Clinton. Right. So they want to be in the same camp with somebody who at least aligns with them, sort of, you know, in a bigger picture level. And I think that's the overall. And then, of course, it's all political in the sense that if they know he's going to. Ben Carson is going to back him because he's more in line with his thinking than he is with Clinton's, right? I mean, to the Republicans tend to think a lot more alike than they do with the Democrats, with Clinton and company. So they're going to align with them in that way. But they also want to have, like what Ken was saying, they want to have that edge up. So if they think Trump's going to win the election or going to be their candidate, they want to be politically aligned with him so they can get the favors and the things that they need, right? They gain more power that way.
They also want to unify the party. I mean, they're going to vote their party no matter what, these staunch Republican politicians like Paul Ryan. I mean, it's like, okay, twist my arm and put a gun to my head and then I'll endorse Trump just because of to unify the party, you know, no other reason, because I can't stand him.
And the next day he comes against him with the Judge Curiel and, mm-hmm. and says, well, I did support him, but
well,
I don't agree
says,
with him.
He says, I support him because I want us to unify behind our party, but yet I don't agree with everything he says. I mean, he doesn't like the Republican establishment. They've been trying to fight this whole racism stigma forever. And, mm-hmm. you know, the Democrats, strategy is to just stigmatize a Republican candidate as a racist. And so all these ideas that they have for policies get lumped in with racism. So they know it works. And so if you believe that just because you have policy ideas aligned with Republicans doesn't mean you're a racist. You know, I mean, there's so many ideas. From an economic standpoint, how you would run the country does not align necessarily with racism. But they know, Democrats know it works strategically. So a lot of the Republican leadership, they hate that. They've been working on changing that. And then now they get this candidate that,
is a racist.
It says all these things, and
he wants to to torture people. He wants to deport people.
David Duke.
I don't know I think this is the classic line for Trump. I really don't know what white supremacy is.
Yeah, but thanks for voting.
Yeah. Hey, listen, we'll be right back. Here's a clip of an instrumental by my friend and colleague, Russian composer Edgar Ahrens. It's called "I'll Go With You." I've worked with Russian composer Edgar Ahrens for quite a few years, building an inventory of songs, many of which feature singer-performer Patricia Welch. We will soon be releasing these songs, components of an album and a musical in progress called Hadley's Castle. When Edgar and I first got together, I was amazed by the brilliance of his musical scores created for movies, TVs, and animations. Here is a sample of the work he did on the Russian TV series, available now on Amazon, called The Secret Agent's Memoir, which had 2 seasons. This score is called Escape and was created for the first season. ¶¶ I am very pleased to say that Bridge of Light Productions, a division of New Galaxy Enterprises, is proud to be the contact point for television and film companies seeking information about this amazing composer's work. If you're in the entertainment business and wish to know more, contact me at johnnybluestar@gmail.com. That's johnnybluestar@gmail.com. My company, New Galaxy Enterprises, is a California corporation specializing in the creation of media and promotional content. We are focused on original, innovative projects that are good for humanity. These projects could be nonfiction books or novels, fictional screenplays or documentary content, websites and website content, commercial advertising content for print, audio, or video products on the internet, television, or radio, musical scores for advertising, television, or film, video, audio editing, etc. We want to promote products and projects that support the environment, encourage a healthy experience in living, developing, nurturing, and useful technology, and offering platforms for positive, socially constructive entertainment or informative, transformative media. Our experience in creating a variety of products like this is rather vast, and we offer client-based and collaborative products, as well as the opportunity of active investors to join us in the creation and promotion of proprietary products, some of which are in latter stages of development. For more information, go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. That's www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. If you're interested in talking to us, just fill out the contact sheet and we will get back with you. We're back with Ken Eade and Sarah Westall discussing the extraordinary presidential primary debates of 2015-2016. We've already seen how claims of criminality and corruption have been advanced against Hillary Clinton by Trump. These have included a vague but suggestive referral to the Vince Foster alleged suicide, Whitewater, the email sent from her server from Hillary's bathroom, and her relationship while Senator and Secretary of State with the Clinton Foundation. Of these, Sanders has recently acknowledged his concern over her relationship with the Clinton Foundation while active in government. But now, in an issue revolving Trump University, Hillary has another weapon in her arsenal. Let's take a brief look at these allegations. In the following exchange, Lindsey Janis introduces the Attorney General of New York in regards to his lawsuit involving Trump University.
The New York Attorney General says Trump appeared in advertisements for the school making false promises. He called the operation one of the most blatant, quote, scams his office has seen.
He's fired dozens of candidates on his TV show, The Apprentice.
You're fired. You're fired. You're fired.
But now the Donald himself is under fire for videos like this, allegedly promising to teach people his secrets, but then not delivering.
At Trump University, we teach success. That's what it's all about.
This morning, New York's attorney general is suing, saying the real estate mogul cheated thousands.
They were fleeced. They were taken. They were convinced by very persuasive motivational speakers and videos of Trump that they were going to learn how to make money in real estate. They didn't get anything.
The lawsuit alleges Trump and other defendants operated an elaborate bait and switch, even advising some students to raise their credit card limits for the next level of more expensive programs.
How serious is this politically? I'm speaking here about the allegation of fraud and the possible loss of the case, either in court or in the public eye. What do you guys think?
I think that they're picking up on anything they can and then making it a big deal. The problem with businesses is you're always going to have issues like that in a business, right? Anybody who runs a company, you're going to have a certain amount of problems with certain customers. I don't know if Trump really had issues or not, but it would be so unlikely for him not to have people like this come out of the woodwork. Every business has problems like that. You could pick any business in this country and there would be lots of people who would dislike them and claim that there is all these problems.
Oh yeah, there's always grievances and there's always lawsuits. It's like part of doing business.
Well, I read some of the stuff that he was presenting, and I was not very happy with it. It just seemed sort of like cheap multi-level propaganda. But I don't know. I didn't know. I wasn't inside of it, so it just wasn't. It was really geared to, as everything else, to bolster the sales through his reputation and through the relationship you'd have with this master of real estate.
Yeah.
Well, in terms of Trump taking this case, he didn't take it lying down. Here's a clip from CNN where the host questions Katrina Pearson, the national spokesperson for the Trump campaign, defends Trump's response to the judge responsible for adjudicating the Trump University case.
As you know, there have been questions about Trump University, and people, journalists, and as well as people who went there, think that it has some dubious claims that have been made. So the Washington Post has been looking to get its hands on documents that could see if Trump University overpromised its students. So now the judge connected to the case, Mr. Trump has been going after that judge in a sort of interesting way. Let me play for you what he said this weekend.
But I have a judge who is a hater of Donald Trump, a hater. He's a hater. His name is Gonzalo Curiel, the judge who happens to be, we believe, Mexican, which is great. I think that's fine. You know what? I think the Mexicans are going to end up loving Donald Trump when I give all these jobs.
So, Katrina, we believe he's Mexican. What is that?
Well, I think there's two parts to this, Allison. First, you know, Trump University, were classes being taught to people. And it's like saying that if you graduated from Harvard and you don't have the same outcome in your profession as everyone else, then you should sue Harvard. And that's just simply absurd.
Well, not exactly. I mean, a lot of the students said that they were overpromised, that all sorts of things were overpromised, that Donald Trump was going to be playing more of an active role than he was, that there was more of a a rate of job success than really was true. I mean, there are many things that people
right.
take issue
with. That's my point. The outcomes. They wanted the equal outcomes, and you just can't guarantee an outcome. And some of these people who were a part of this case have already given a glowing review of Trump University, so this will play out. With regards to this judge, however, there was supposed to be a hearing last summer, and this judge postponed it for whatever reason. But I think what's really interesting about this particular judge, as Mr. Trump refers to him as a Trump hater, is he even mentions on his judicial question that he was a La Raza Lawyers Association member. This is an organization that has been out there organizing these anti-Trump protesters mm-hmm. with the Mexican flags. They are pushing it. These signs have been very apparent. And so Mr. Trump is just stating the obvious.
But this judge isn't Mexican. He was born here. He's American.
No, I'm not saying he's Mexican. What I'm saying is the reason he's
right,
pointing
Mr.
this out
Trump
is because La Raza is tied to.
But why is Mr. Trump saying
he says, we believe.
He's Mexican?
He says we believe.
But what's the point of that? Why is he going after an ethnicity? What's the point?
Well, it's because what we see outside of these rallies, these anti-Trump rallies, these criminal rallies, these criminal protesters who are out there defacing property and attacking police officers, doing so under the guise of an anti-Trump protest with their Mexican flags and La Raza. And mm-hmm. this judge is connected to that.
Before we discuss this exciting new episode, let's hear the following clip where Fox host Megyn Kelly disputes Katrina Pearson's claim about the Judge Curiel's connection to La Raza. In this clip, she speaks to Ben Shapiro.
We now Trump supporter and attorney David Wohl and Ben Shapiro, former Breitbart News editor at large and editor in chief now at DailyWire.com. Good to see you both. So that Hi. Allegation by Katrina Pearson is wrong, and I just want to correct the record. La Raza Lawyers Association is completely different from the group that's organizing the anti-Trump protest, which is National Council on La Raza. They are not affiliated and they are not the same. That was an error by Katrina. Having said that, I'll ask you, Ben, about the appropriateness of going after a sitting federal court judge and mentioning the fact that, quote, he is Mexican, also wrong, he is American. He is not Mexican.
No, he was born in Indiana, but this is typical Trump. Again, it's not a surprise that Trump is going after people he feels victimize him. This is sort of what he does. But to go after the judge on the basis of his ethnicity is a little bit bizarre, given the fact, again, that his ethnicity really has nothing to do with the case. And it demonstrates once again that for Trump, who has plenty of grounds to go after this judge, by the way, the fact that he's an Obama appointee, as you heard mentioned by Trump, the fact that he has relations with groups that Trump finds unpleasant, all those are fine. But to go after his ethnicity just demonstrates that for Trump, there's some sort of bizarre connection between the ethnicity of the person and the ideology the person must hold. I don't know why him being a Mexican would even be relevant to the conversation, especially when he's not from Mexico and his parents are Mexican.
David?
What are your thoughts?
I think that it's completely inappropriate for a presidential candidate to be, first of all, to be ridiculing a judge. Second of all, to be talking about a case where, you know, where he's attacking a jurist in a case that's being adjudicated. And thirdly, for attacking his ethnicity, which has absolutely nothing to do with anything. I think that's the worst part. And I think it's just inappropriate for a candidate to be doing that.
Well, I think it's more of the same, right? He just speaks out of line and he messes it up. I mean, he's just not, He's not talking like he should. He's saying stupid things, and
he's also revealing who he really is. I mean, the first thing that comes out of his mouth is usually if someone's Mexican or if it's Muslims or if it's blacks or anything. I mean, the issue just pops right out of his mouth, and then he tries to backpedal and hide it. But I mean, he can't hide the fact that he's probably a racist.
Well, when he's talked about the judge, he said, "Well, and the judge is a Mexican. Oh, I love the Mexican people.
Yeah, that's
and
okay.
They're gonna love me."
It's
all right. Yeah. You're allowed to be Mexican, and you can get his love. But this guy was a Mexican.
There was a guy at his rally who happened to be black, and he was holding up a pro-Trump sign to shield his eyes from the sun. He didn't come there as one of the disciples. He came there to honestly find out what was going on. And Trump said, singled him right out and said, "Oh, there's my African American."
Oh, really?
And the guy came out in a statement and said, "Look, I'm not a Trump supporter. I was just there because I wanted to hear what was going on." And if he would have said something like, "What's up, dog?" I would have really been offended, you know? And that's the thing about him. He's not politically incorrect. He's just politically bad.
Well, he's ignorant. He's ignorant, you know, because he thinks that's the way to connect with them. And he's, but the thing is, that's really how a lot of people are. They're very, I think he's trying in a lot of ways, but I just think he's ignorant to that. That is what racism is. You know, when that's your stereotype, and he doesn't understand, and a lot of people don't understand, so they get offended that he's being called racist, because they think, well, you know, they just don't understand. It's an ignorance, I think, in this country, and I think a lot of people are trying, but they just don't get it. And there's a lot of paradigms that are entrenched in our thinking, and I don't know.
I think it goes way back, and there's a lot of work that still has to be done. I mean, it was not too long ago where we had segregated bathrooms, and black people had to sit in the back of the bus. So
and he probably remembers that, because he was alive. My dad was alive during that era. He grew up in the South. He remembers that.
A Patriot's Act is a Brent Marks legal thriller written by Kenneth Ede, a novelist and attorney appearing today and often on Threshold Radio. Patriot's Act is a novel about Ahmed, a U.S. citizen, formerly of Iraq, who was sent to Guantanamo detention camp in complete ignorance of any alleged crime. Brent Marks, a Californian attorney, is originally hired by Ahmed's wife to fight for his release. This segment begins as Ahmed is recovering from a mock execution intended to break down his resistance to questioning.
Chapter 3. Ahmed opened his eyes to complete blackness.
"Am I alive?"
Panicking, he put his hand in front of his face and he couldn't see it. He moved his fingers. Still nothing. Ahmed's frantic eyes moved back and forth, and there was not a sliver of light.
"I'm blind," he thought.
A sudden surge of adrenaline compelled him to action. His brain sent a signal to stand up, and as he did, the pain shot from his feet to his head like a hammer hit on a high striker in a carnival. Gravity pulled his broken body to his knees, and he collapsed. He felt his body. No clothing.
"What happened? Am I dead?"
"No," he thought.
"I must be alive."
He was in too much pain to be dead. He felt his chest for bullet wounds, but found none. Except for some tender spots on his chest and back and some scrapes on his knees, there was nothing.
"They must have used rubber bullets."
Ahmed strained to see, but it was no use. He felt his face. It was swollen and bruised.
"They must have blinded me in the shooting," he thought.
As his other four senses came to life, he realized that he was sore all over. He tried to stand again, but his legs would not cooperate. He felt them with his new eyes. The bones felt straight and unbroken.
"Must be sprains, but why am I blind?"
He struggled to control the panic and the terror.
"Think, think, have to think."
Ahmed crawled on his hands and knees and propped himself up against the wall, which was as cold and damp as the floor. He felt along the walled boundaries of his confinement.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6... About 7 feet in one direction. 1, 2, 3, 4, about 5 feet in the other direction.
Next, he negotiated the circumference on his hands and knees. How did he get himself into this mess? From his cozy home in Santa Barbara to the battered and occupied Baghdad to this. His brother Sabine needed his help, so he went. It was as simple as that. The next events were a blur to him. The raid, his capture. Now he was in some kind of military prison. Since his capture, Ahmed had been stripped naked, cavity searched, shaved bald, beaten, kicked, and spat on. And then the mock execution. It made his current confinement in this dark cage somewhat of a relief, not at all what it was designed for. The walls were as cold as a headstone. He felt around them until he came to a steel door. He thought of his wife, Catherine. She must know he was missing by now. But even if he was to be rescued, what good is a blind husband? An accountant by trade, there was no way he could work with figures as a blind man. He would be a complete burden on the entire family. The best thing to do is to kill myself, he thought. He had some life insurance, and wondered if it would pay off in the event of his suicide. The time passed, but Ahmed had no way of measuring it. How long have I been like this? Ahmed concentrated on his other senses, but there was no input save the sound of the pounding of his own heart. His mouth was as dry as a slab of jerky, so he tried to wet his broken lips with his tongue. In despair, he dropped to the floor. Lying there on his back, he rubbed his eyes, and suddenly, he saw tiny stars above him in the blackness. Light! I can see light! The tiny stars spread out in a geometric pattern like symbols in a matrix. This can't be stars. They're not random. Ahmed's accountant's brain analyzed the patterns of light, but then they turned into eyes, angrily staring at him. Stop! Stop! Please! Somebody help me! Then the eyes pulled back to reveal a miniature firing squad with their rifles trained on Ahmed. He heard the blast of the rifles, almost in slow motion, and felt the bullets ripping through his flesh as his brain switched off.
Let's focus for a moment on the consequences of Trump's statements on the spirit and tenor of the campaign. Following the proposed deportation order to Mexicans and his proposed ban on Muslims coming to America, there started to be more disruptions in Trump's rallies. The amount of disruption and problems, if tracked carefully, could take a whole program. One of them concerned a Muslim woman who gave this touching interview with CNN's Don Lemon after being publicly escorted out of one of Trump's rallies.
I have this sincere belief that if people get to know each other one-on-one, that they'll stop being afraid of each other and we'll be able to get rid of all this hate in the world, literally. So that was really my goal, was to let people see that Muslims are not that scary. The people around me were lovely. There was people who were very nice. They were sharing their popcorn. It was very nice people all around me, the people I had conversations with. But then what happened when the crowd got this like hateful crowd mentality, as I was being escorted, it was really quite telling of and a vivid example of what happens when you start using this hateful rhetoric and how it can incite a crowd where moments ago were very kind to me. Actually, one woman reached over and shook my hand and said, I'm so sorry this is happening to you.
Yeah. So you said that you wanted to show people at the rally that, you know, Muslims are just like you. But some people would say, why would you even go and put yourself in that position, Rose, to be around those people?
Because I don't want to think of them as those people. I think that's what the problem is that we look at people and we categorize them as those people who are bad people and these people are the good people. And I believe that people in all camps are decent people when you get to know them, as was exampled or as was evident by the people who were around me, who were very lovely people. But it's when you get that hateful rhetoric going is what incites people. I never felt truly threatened. I was not afraid of these people because I truly believe that the decent people would have stood up and not permitted that. That's my belief. I believe.
So
that
what
most
were they saying to you?
Are decent.
So because according to some of the reporting, they said they were booing you and shouting you to get out. And did one person really say you have a bomb? You have a bomb?
Yeah, one guy was saying, "Get out! Do you have a bomb? Do you have a bomb?" And I said, "No. Do you have a bomb?" So no, they were saying ugly things. One guy was saying, God is great. And I'm like, yeah, God is great. And one guy said, Isa loves you, which is the Arabic word for Jesus. And I said, yeah, I know. And Jesus loves you too. So it's the thing is that people don't even know what they're saying. They don't even, they just get riled up in the hate mongering and they don't even know what they're saying. So I basically feel sorry for them.
This one was really, she was very articulate, wasn't she, Ken?
Yeah, she was. I mean, she basically was trying to raise awareness.
And she, you know, Don Lemon says to her, you know, why did you come here? You knew that what, you know what these people were like. She said, well, that's why I came here, because I don't want to, I don't care what they're like. I believe that people have, you know, basically a good heart if they could actually see. And I'm not going to look at them as another type of person.
Yeah, I think, I mean, she has a very legitimate point. That's the principles that the country was founded upon. I mean, we are a country of immigrants, are we not? And it's very dangerous to signal out a group of people as Donald has done, you know, in a nationalist fashion, and saying that they're not us. They are us. I mean, they're part of us. Us includes a lot of different people of different walks of life and different ethnicities and different religions and all kinds of different
things. I think it's important to take a two-track policy. I think it's important for us to be that way and to be inclusive. But at the same point, we have to realize that there is a lot of hatred for us as well. And one thing he did say is, where is this hatred coming from? We need to figure that out, and why. And, you know, it gets back to the bloated military and all of our policies and some of our...
If you're blowing up someone's village and killing all their relatives, so yeah, they're going to hate a whole generation of Americans, sure.
Yeah, and I did a show with John Perkins about the economic hitman and some of the things that we're doing. And if you really want to get rid of terrorism, you get rid of the things that we do that make people desperate. You know, but now that we've created a bunch of desperate people, we got to protect ourselves, right?
It's true. It's true. I mean, but we haven't just created a bunch of them. We've created a whole generation of them.
Well, let's follow through on this situation, because after tangling with various individuals and groups, Trump found himself to be challenged by his attitude towards Mexicans, Muslims, people with disabilities, and women. In February, while in Las Vegas, while watching a protester from the podium being led to security, he said, I'd like to punch him in the face. I love the old days. You know, when they used to give guys like the, what they used to do to guys like this when they did this sort of thing, they'd be carried out on a stretcher, folks. At another occasion, supporters were told to knock the crap out of any protesters, tried to pummel him with tomatoes, and promised to pay for legal fees. Back in February, a rally was canceled after protesters and Trump followers clashed in Chicago. At one point, a 78-year-old man was arrested for sucker punching a reporter. At first, Trump said he would pay for the legal fees, then backtracked. At the end of March, Donald Trump's manager, Corey Lewandowski, was charged with simple battery against reporter Michelle Fields. Reporters were often referred to as absolute scum and the most dishonest people, and they're kept in fenced-off pens and are asked to stay there during the rally. Going back to November, a CNN reporter left the press pen to report on the situation in the crowd and was threatened by Lewandowski to go back to the pen or he'd pull all his credentials. Lewandowski told Hope Gray, one of Trump's reporters, to tell the errant reporter to get back in the pen or he'll be effing blacklisted. Although Trump denies his involvement and talks about his rallies as being essentially love fests, what does his behavior and those of his followers say about the true nature of his campaign? And what about the behavior of these other campaigns, Cruz, Clinton, and Sanders?
This is what I was saying before, Johnny, is if you want to be the president, you have to act like the president. You have to know that there's people out there that are going to disagree with your point of view, and you can't just brand them as liars and say that you're going to punch them in the face and you advocate violence. I mean, it is not something that you can advocate, and yet he's doing that.
Well, I think it's dangerous to advocate for it. The problem is that he's doing it more openly. The other ones are doing it behind the scenes. It's really ugly. Yeah. You know, it is. The only person that probably isn't really doing it is Sanders, but his people are, and, you know, his followers are. So it's ugly all around. It's important, though, that he behaves more appropriately, because people will follow that behavior.
He's got to behave in a presidential manner, even though he's just a candidate. That's what I think. And, you know, you have to address your opposition. You can't just say that they're full of shit and that, you know, you're going to have them arrested, because that's like you said before, it's the fascist way of doing things. And fascism is not an acceptable political milieu of our country.
He is what he is. Like you can see it. He just plays it out there. The other people are really corrupt behind the scenes. So you have to put on a face of being a good person. And that's important because people follow your behavior and they mimic
and
you.
You're a leader.
That's really an important part of being a leader. Let's face it. I just think that the fraud behind the scenes should go away as well. I don't think that belongs in leadership either. I think that you have to do certain things in order to, there's hard decisions and there's hard things that you have to do when you're in leadership, but that's different than being unethical and fraud. There's a line. And,
I think in a certain manner, like I said before, when you're talking to leaders of other countries, for example, just in this one example, okay, but there's many examples, you have to be politically correct because you cannot go into someone else's house and offend them. You have to be careful. You have to be diplomatic. You can't go in blazing with your guns going because that's not the way that you're going to work anything out with anyone who has an absolutely different point of view than your own.
Yeah,
it's just not a way that's going to happen. No,
it just doesn't work.
Well, we're talking about the campaigns. That's what this whole thing has been about. And I break them down into different components: rallies, debates, social media exchanges, information provided by candidates on the web, news coverage, and electoral activities regarding the actual voting. My question is to you guys, did the 2015-2016 campaigns, were they adequate enough by their structure and content to really inform the American people so they can make the right decisions?
Of course not. But they've raised awareness. They've raised awareness, and that's the first step. But they're not adequate by any means. You can't get in watching these presidential debates assuming that you're going to absorb and understand everything that's being talked about, which is a big assumption for the general public. But you cannot put everything out there that the voter needs to know to make a decision. It's impossible.
I was going to say the nice thing about them bringing some of these issues to the forefront is it's making it easier for the politicians who want to do some of these things to be able to do them, because if they're not supported by the people, they can't, or if it's the people aren't demanding it, then they'll just be kicked out of office. They won't be
supported. And they're not going to even talk about it. I mean, people are fed up with rising employment. They're fed up with the economy. They're fed up with the big banks being bailed out. They're fed up with their investments disappearing. They're fed up with governments who are made up of people that tell them that things are going to change and they're getting better when they're not getting better, and they know it's not getting better. They want to change, and we've actually have people who are talking about getting some changes done, even though the solutions I think they're being proposed or you can't really communicate them in this medium, which is what Johnny's asking. I mean, you can't really do it, but at least it's being talked about, and we're not talking about people having affairs and abortions and things like that have already been decided, and there's already laws on that. We're talking about things that people are concerned about. They're affecting them, and I think that's good.
Well, I think there are a couple of issues that I think have now been in people's minds in a new way. One of them is the trade agreements. I think that people are much more conscious of that as a problem. The second thing is they're more worried, and I mean, at this point, this is a very big thing. They're worried about whether or not there's a democracy, whether they can, they're having, because of what happened in Colorado in the primary, where basically Cruz came in and they avoided having anybody vote at all.
Well, and that's what they did in Iowa with Sanders and Clinton, right? There's no way she won all six coin tosses.
Right.
So
it's different all across the board in every one of those states. But, I think with Sanders talking about ending crony politics, I think this is something that really has to be talked about. And that's something I advocated in my book that we talked about, Terror on Wall Street, in the last program. And I think it raises the awareness of this nexus between government and big business that really has to be looked at.
I think that's maybe the spotlight's been shown on that. That's maybe the most important thing that has come out is this, the fact that these that these politicians are bought and paid for, just like Trump has said. But I don't think that has ever really been said loud enough until Sanders and Trump.
Of course not, because the people that were saying, that were talking about the issues before were
are paid.
The people that were bought and paid for.
Yeah, exactly. And so it is an amazing.
Like,
it
like
is
Clinton
an amazing.
And, I mean, this race was supposed to be between Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton, because the big money was behind both of those two candidates. But what they didn't count on was that the social media has come in and people are finding out stuff that they wouldn't have normally found out in the traditional way of listening to the TV commercials and in listening to the mudslinging against the other person. You know, it's a different ball game now, and Trump, for one, is he's on Twitter all the time, which you never see that before, right?
Yeah, he says he owns the Wall Street Journal without the losses.
Pretty much, pretty you know? Much.
Well, I think we should. You know, speaking of Twitter, let's talk for a second about another of Trump's somewhat entertaining episode of the wife wars with Cruz.
Oh, the wife wars. Oh, my God. I just ignored that, Johnny. So you'll have to talk about that.
I thought it was the most amazing thing.
It was terribly petty.
I mean, first of all, some PAC started it in Utah, and they sent out this picture of Trump's wife as a model. She was not exposed, but she was obviously without clothes, and they sent it to all these Mormons.
Yeah,
and who did that? Cruz's campaign?
Well, a Cruz PAC.
Okay. I think so, Cruz PAC did it. Yeah,
so Cruz
said he didn't have anything to do.
Oh no, he had nothing to do with it. So Trump sends a he says, well, if you're gonna do this, I'm gonna do something with your wife, which is
he did send out an ugly picture of Cruz's wife and said, here's Lion Ted's wife.
Yeah, but that's so dumb.
I mean,
so it's very petty and very stupid.
Dumb. Did he just send an? I didn't see the picture of his. Was it just
an ugly picture? Said, "Do you really want this woman to be your first lady?"
Crazy.
Yeah. The reason
that actually,
it wasn't her. It
what's
wasn't,
crazy about that? Hold on. What's crazy about that is that actually makes Cruz looks better, because nobody cares what she looks like. I mean, but we might care about morality of you know what I'm saying.
Well,
people do care what
people.
Is dumb, but they might care about how they look. That's
really
the thing.
You really think so? Well, look at some of the.
Well, it wasn't so much.
Some of the first ladies that came into office, they aren't all beautiful.
It wasn't the way.
No, they're not beautiful, but they're presentable. I mean, you know, but I'm sure Cruz's wife would look fine if she was in the position. I mean,
it's just ridiculous.
You have to dress to the occasion. Well, so it's really stupid.
Did you see the picture?
Did
you see the picture, Ken?
I saw. You mean of Cruz's wife?
Yeah, because it wasn't the way she looked. It was her face, because she was either snarling or angry.
Yeah,
and they
it's a horrible picture. It's one of those National Enquirer things, you know,
it's
type
just
pictures.
Ridiculous.
Anyway,
it shouldn't take any of our time even talking about it.
Okay, well, we'll
yeah, it shouldn't. I mean, this is Trump's Twitter's. I think it should be a new reality TV show.
Well, I
think all that does is point that, you know what, I'm going to give you what I think the forecast of what I think is going to happen. I think it's going to be Clinton against Trump, and I think Clinton's going to win.
Yes.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think so. Unfortunately. Because one thing that he's called to, you know, she has a very, very debatable background in a lot of different ways, and
she's tied to the cronyism. Bought and paid for, like you said, Johnny.
Yeah,
but that's what's going to happen. And but you know what? Next time around, in another 4 years, maybe the same thing won't happen, or maybe it's going to be 8 years. But I think it's going to shift. I think now people are mad as hell, and they're not going to take it anymore, and that's not going to change.
Well, and I think having all this stuff out there, maybe it'll allow politicians to be able to do stuff. And
I think
so. And that's what we need to have happen. I'm going to tell you, I like having a change up of having a female in office. I like that. I just wish there wasn't all that baggage that came with it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people like that. I think a lot of people like that. But I think she's more of an institution than her own person.
I agree.
If she was her own person, if she was she could come in and be this, you know, symbol that would show to the rest of the world that yes, we can have an Angela Merkel, we can have a, you know, we can have a woman. In charge of the country. And someone was talking to me yesterday, an Italian person, you know, about the United States, and what makes them different is that there's a lot more women in a lot higher places of in business in the United States than there is in, for example, Italy. And, and I think that's good. And I think that why not in government? Why not? You know, but I think it's the wrong, just like I think Trump is the wrong choice on the Republican side, I think that Hillary's the wrong choice on the Democratic side. I want Elizabeth Warren in there instead, someone like that, you know.
Well, I just want somebody ethical, and I think sometimes the way they are is not how they lead, and that's been historically the case on
multiple people.
So, you know, you don't really know. And
that happens a lot with Supreme Court justices. You know, they think they're putting someone in there who's ultra conservative, and it turns out to be someone who's got a liberal point of view. So, you know, yeah, that sometimes that happens. But I unfortunately don't think it's going to happen in this case. I think it's going to be business as usual. I think we know what's going to happen. I think we didn't know what was going to happen with Obama, but it's clear now what happened, and I think the same thing's going to happen under Hillary.
Did you guys hear? Ron Paul speaking.
I listened to those clips. I thought they were interesting.
I followed his whole campaign last time around, and there was so many games that were played against him. There was media blackout. There was all sorts of stuff, and it was really interesting because I was watching. That's where I think the public started to become aware of how much, you know, how many games are actually being played, because Ron Paul's campaign was a joke, the way the media dealt with him.
But I think it was interesting how he compared himself to Sanders and to Trump as basically an outsider. And I think that was an interesting parallel to draw, because if their ideologies are so different from one another, but the thing is that they are outsiders. They're coming in, you know, they're coming from outside the system, basically. And I think that's a good thing.
Well, and I think there's a lot of important things that they agree on that people don't realize. And I don't know if either one of them are as extreme once it comes down to the negotiation table. But, you know, I think Cruz is, because you've seen him in action. But the important thing is that get somebody in there that's going to change some of this stuff and make it not so corrupt. The problem is,
the other point is, we can't really change anything without changing the Congress, because, you know, if we have a president that's different and wants to do different things, unless the Congress goes along with the president, there's nothing that he can do. We have a Carter situation again. I mean, that's it.
There isn't a lot of power. People think he has more power than he has. And I also think at the local levels, I mean, we have corruption at every level, and that's the things that needs to change. We need to have, like Johnny keeps saying, an incredible paradigm shift.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think we need to, I mean, I'm extreme in this point of view. I think we need to vote those bastards out and you know, it would start paying attention to who we're putting in there.
Well,
especially people who have been in there for years and years. I think we need term limits. I really think that's something that needs to be done. And I think we need to rethink our whole political financial system as far as financing goes, because special interest groups and corporations are basically have a blank check to write to fund these campaigns, and it's not right.
Yeah, and that changed just recently, and that
with Bernie Sanders. Yeah,
that messed,
I mean, you know, he hits me up for $3 or $27, and you know, there's strength in numbers, and he's shown that it can work.
I like that too,
and I hope that other politicians are going to follow the lead and do the same thing. And I think they will.
And I you know, I was impressed by the fact that since he did it, suddenly he became quite a bit of a media star. He got a lot of media eventually.
Well, Johnny, he's changed history, basically. I mean, whether he wins or not, he has changed history. He's changed the whole political campaign finance system.
Well,
he turned it on his ear by using social media, basically.
I hope that sticks, because the way we have the PAC funding now, that's just, that destroys democracy.
Oh, that's so stinky. You're right.
Well, it destroyed, that right there could destroy our country.
It sure could.
Yeah, and it's really hard to police these PACs to know that a candidate is not really behind some of the things that are happening. So I'm not impressed by that criteria of the candidate staying outside.
Well, I love the fact that the Sanders campaign really turned it back into a democracy. You know, that you can really all get involved and you can fund. And that's how it should be.
That's
exactly how it should be.
Yep.
Well, we will be back on Threshold Radio for more on rebuilding our political paradigms.